There are a few people who are, to you, very, very, very close friends. They're the people you confide in and the people you have fun with. And then there are the people who cross the threshold, who are still your friends, but they're your family. To me and to our family, Jen and her husband, Paulo, don't forget to check out his episode too, are our family here in Seattle. They've been there for us through thick and thin. They always come ready with food and check in on us every day, amongst a million other ways. We can't thank them enough, and we love them so much because they're our chosen family here. So today we're going to hear from Jen about her family life, growing up as a military kid, and having to find her own way at times. It's a story about persistence, responsibility, and through it all, love for her family. Take a listen. All right, well, welcome everyone, and thanks for being here with us. Today we are talking with Jen, and Jen is my friend.
I love that I can see you doing this. It's the best.
I know they can't see us, but yes, we can see each other. Yes. Jen, why don't you introduce yourself for the people?
Yes,
out there.
Perfect. Hi, I am Jen. I'm Bertie's friend. I identify as an Asian Pacific Islander woman, as a mom, as a caregiver, a wife, a Beyonce lover.
You had to throw it in there.
Yeah, obviously. I love dumplings. I'm very interested in celebrity gossip. I spend too much time on the internet. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
The word of the podcast is Beyonce. So every time you hear Beyonce out there,
take a shot.
Feel free to take a shot. Take your hot sauce out of your bag.
Yes.
Whatever Swag. You need to, you know,
whatever yes. you need to do,
swing your hand back and forth, yes. whatever, whip your hair around, do what makes you feel good. Anyway, so, you know, I let's start from the beginning. Where did you grow up? What was your family life growing
yeah.
up?
Yeah. So I was born in Germany. My mom is German. My dad is Chamorro. And they met in Germany. My dad was in the army and was stationed there. We lived there for a little while. My like very early childhood was sort of going from Germany to Saipan and then back to Germany. So my dad got out of the army for a little bit and then rejoined when my brother was born. I spent a few years there with like my nuclear family, I guess. So like my dad, my mom, and my brother. And then when I was in first grade, I think, my parents separated and we moved to the States with my dad. And that was kind of the last time that I lived with my mom. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess that's sort of the beginning is like I was in a like international school in Germany. I've like always been around a lot of my dad's family. So when we moved to the States, my dad's sister and her boyfriend, who's now her husband, moved in with us. Lots of like caregiving in the form of like aunts and uncles and cousins and things like that.
Sure. Yeah. So when you moved from Germany, where in the US did you move to?
To Washington. So
to
my
Washington,
dad was stationed.
Where we are.
Yeah. Where we are, like at Fort Lewis. And so we moved to Olympia first. And okay. lived in an apartment, like in Lacey, and then moved to Spanaway after that, like my dad got a house. Washington's always been like a weird, my dad was in the army, he was stationed back and forth in Fort Lewis quite a few times. So I was like 6 months old when I got my ears pierced, the Tacoma Mall. We lived like right outside of base when I was really young. My mom learned how to speak English watching like Days of Our Lives when we were here, when my dad was stationed here when I was really young. So yeah, we've always like in some way, shape or form kind of ended up back here, but because of the like large army base.
Yeah. So I mean, do you remember being in Germany at all? Or do you mostly remember being in Washington with your family.
Yeah, I remember being in Germany. I remember little things like we only had like one TV station, so we could only watch cartoons like, you know, on the weekends or something like that. I remember visiting a few places. Most of my memories are connected to my brother. So it's just like Travis being my like co-pilot next to me sort of all the time for everything. Because we're only 18 months apart. So it was like, we were very like attached at the hip back then. So yeah, I remember things like mostly connected to Trav. Like us like fighting or like him getting in trouble or, you know, like taking a vacation somewhere. And then also like my parents separating and my mom staying. And I think sort of the beginning of that, like not healthy relationship of sort of being able to like go back and see and say like, oh yeah, that was all there then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember any like conversation that your parents had with you at the time, like when they decided that they weren't going together?
Cause they made us pick who we wanted to live with, which I think in hindsight, is like not,
it's a lot,
the healthiest thing to do. I laugh now because it's like, what is happening? And because I'm a parent. So like to think of Ari making a choice like that in 2 years is like beyond. But yeah, they were.
Wow.
They were obviously separating. My mom had moved out. And so they took us to Burger King and they were like, hey, who do you want to live with? Because your mom's staying in Germany and your dad's getting stationed in the States. And I decided I wanted to live with my dad, and Travis decided he wanted to live with me. Right? So like sweet. He was going to go wherever I was going to go. I like learned like way later on that like we were always going to go with my dad. So I don't know if it was just like a vibe check. Like, how are y'all feeling?
Is this going to be okay?
Let's make sure. Yeah. You all are on the same page, but I think, you know, knowing that now doesn't change the fact that like, I think I've always like this sort of caregiving aspect of like always taking care of Travis, always taking care of myself, always sort of being more adult than I needed to be probably starts there where I was making like very adult decisions for myself and my brother at six. Yeah. Like Ari's going to be four.
Right.
That's wild.
You know, I think that's a big part of how like we take on our personalities is like this, the circumstances that we're put into, things like that, that really make it hard for us to be like, no, I'm just not going to be, you know, a caring person. Sounded like you like filled in that gap, right? That for your brother from the beginning, but also with your dad, like you sort of like filled in that gap as the caring person.
Yeah. I think like even before we left Germany, like we were like, what is it called? Like a latchkey kid, right? Like when you had your key and you would like go home. But
around your neck.
Exactly. Around your neck, make sure it was like connected to things. But like, I remember my dad going to PT in the morning and like, he would leave and I would get Travis up and we would get ready for school. And then he would come home and then he would send us off to school and then we would come home. And I think for a while, maybe we had a babysitter in our building or something like that. But, you know, it's also just like survival in those situations, right? You're like doing what you need to do. You don't think about it until later. And I think now as a parent, like thinking about how I, you know, Travis was about the same age as Ari. So like, what?
That is wild.
Right? Yeah. So just trying to like wrap my head around that. And I think, you know, it's obviously like been a really long time and sort of you think about things and like, it's like funny or, you know, you're like, haha, but then it's like, haha, trauma, like not always, haha, funny. Yeah.
Right. Especially as an adult, right. To think back, an adult now who is a parent to be like, I'm going to ask my 4-year-old, who do you want to live with?
Yeah. No. I ask my 4-year-old what he wants for dinner and I don't always believe that I'm going to get the right answer or that I am going to interpret it the right way.
Right.
So that's wild.
Totally. So, you know, so here you are, you're living in Graham. Your father is probably deployed multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're still taking care of your brother and yourself.
So that's where I think the like caregiving from like different family members comes into play, right? So when we lived in Lacey, my dad's sister lived with us. And then when we lived in Spanaway, my dad's nieces came to live with us. So like my cousins who were older. And the same thing for them. I mean, they're in high school, right? But when I was, you know, in elementary school, I was like, oh my God, they're so like grown and cool and whatever. But I, yeah, can think back now and be like, oh, she was in like the 10th grade, which is bananas. And also so PI, right? To just like send family over from an island to be like, hey, you're going to go live with your uncle and take care of your little cousins.
Well, and you know, I think it's that familial sort of expectation. You just kind of fill in. How did your dad come, like, did he join the army from Guam and then he
So my dad joined the army
from Saipan.
He went to school for a little while and then he joined the army, and it's one of those things that, you know, like I wish my dad talked about it more, but I think it's also probably hard for him. But he joined the army, he went to boot camp, he has said like very like bare bones that, you know, when he was done with boot camp or basic training, I don't know which one they call it, that usually like people have a lot of family there and they're really like proud of you and supportive and whatever. And like people come to see this moment for you, but my dad had nobody there because it's so far. And, you know, so he was like, there was basically like a place for people to go if they had family. And then like a bus, if you had no family and you just like get on the bus and you go to your next place. But he was an exchange student. So Saipan's a Commonwealth, but, you know, like he was my dad's very smart. He was an exchange student. He came to the States for a little while when he was in high school. He moved to Oregon, where my uncle was going to Oregon State, and stayed with him and helped with his kids, who incidentally are my cousins who came to live with us when we were little.
Of course.
So it's all right. Like all big kind of coming full circle. But yeah, when he joined the army after Travis was born again, I think that was sort of the, like, this is his career, this is what he's going to do. And like very much of that generation of like, your job is just your job for your career, right? Like what he was doing in the army is then what he was doing when he got out of the army, which is what he's doing now working for the federal government. So when I'm like, I got a new job, he's like, what are you doing? Or like, cool, like what does that mean, you know? He joined like pretty young and from Saipan, and then try to get out and see like if there was something else. But it's hard life over there and not a lot to do, and trying to raise two kids and with like a German woman who was like on this island who had no concept of like what she was doing or where she was. Like I remember her saying that when she was pregnant with Travis, my grandma would make her wear shirts like that were my dad's in garlic, because, you know, like spirits and superstitions and things like that. And I don't know how much is true or how much my mom was like exaggerating, but I'm sure there was a lot, being Catholic, being on an island, like not understanding the language, that was like very overwhelming.
Well, that's so fascinating. I mean, I totally get the whole like generational care thing, right? Like it's such an important part to the ways that, you know, brown families basically will say like, this is how we take care of each other. And experience a lot of that myself too. Like I was like, I don't know who's going to be there when I get home. Someone's going to be there.
Someone will be there. Right.
So then, but you have another brother.
I do.
So you want to talk about how he came into your life too?
I think probably when I was in fifth or sixth grade, my dad was doing operations or exercises, what they call them, in Thailand. And so my dad met his second wife, Franco's mom, in Thailand. And the exercises went on for a while. And so my dad was kind of back and forth in Thailand. And so they decided to get married, and they went from Thailand to Saipan, which is where they got married. Travis and I were not there. So we were still in the States when he got married. And then
did you know it was happening?
Yes, but okay. We did not go. Yeah. And I can't remember who was living with us. It must have been probably one of my cousins would be my guess. And then we went to visit my mom, like the last summer that we went to go visit my mom or see my mom, in Germany. And we spent the summer there. And I remember calling my dad, like our house, to be like, hey, we're coming home, or, you know, something like what this is our plan. And she answered the phone. And I was like, oh, like she lives here now. Cool. It was a like really interesting, tumultuous time. I think like no one like maybe processed that how that would feel for everyone. that they were married for a few years and Franco was born when I was in high school, and was really like with me a lot, like even when he was really little. And then at some point, so I think when I was in the ninth grade, I moved to Virginia to live with my dad's sister, just because like things were like incredibly sort of fraught and not going well. So I moved to Virginia. Mm. We moved to Virginia with my dad's sister, who's my aunt, who came to stay with us when we had Ari.
Okay.
And so I've lived with my aunt and uncle also like on and off for, you know, a really long time. And I was there when they have five kids, when a few of their babies were born. So I lived in Virginia with my aunt and uncle for a while. And then my dad pulled like a I'm your dad card and made me come home. So I lived back in Washington for a few years. And then going into my senior year, shit got crazy and it all sort of fell apart. And my dad put us in a car and said, you're moving to California. Like you're going to go stay with Auntie Beto and Uncle Vaughn. And so we drove from Spanaway to Monterey in like 12 hours. I think my dad stopped for gas like twice. And it was very weird and very difficult. And I remember like crying and being like, I want to stay. It's my senior year. Like, let me live with my friends or, you know, just sort of like anybody. Wow. And he said, no. And so we moved to California and I stayed for a few years. Travis moved back and like moved back in with my dad for a while, but I moved home, I guess, like back into my dad's house in 2004 to help take care of Franco when my dad was sort of deployed. And so that was like the beginning of my journey back to like the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea it was like that. So let's talk about, let's pull this apart a little because there's a lot here. There's a lot there. Let's talk about like communication. Mm. Let's start there.
I love this because today we actually talked about this already, that my therapist had asked me when I feel like I express deep feelings. And I was like, what do you mean deep? And she's like, any emotion, you know, like anger, sadness, frustration. And I was like, here's the thing. Like I was raised Catholic. I come from like a very like traditional, like Pacific Islander family. Like what's an express an emotion? Like we like to call that repressing things.
Yeah.
Like,
suppress. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Keep it all down. Yeah. It's a lot.
So when these things were communicated to you, did you feel like, okay, that's just what's going to happen. There's no point in me sort of communicating how I feel about that.
100%. Yes. I think at a certain point, like you just sort of know what is true is true, or like what is going to happen is going to happen. Right. So like I could have argued, but, when I don't like what's to argue with your parent. And two, like, even if you disagree or it feels like wildly inappropriate or disrespectful, or like same thing with like being able to look back, like I'm caregiving and doing all of this stuff and yet not being respected and being able to sort of make my own decisions. And so at some points and sometimes I'm an adult, right? Because you rely on me. So you need me to do these things. But then when you want to make decisions for me, I'm a child. Like, well, you're just kidding. I'm your parent. I know what's best. well, do you? Because I knew what was best 5 minutes ago when I was doing all this stuff for you. But also, like, respect is very big. So, expressing feelings, resentment, anger, whatever. I mean, I think, like, everybody knew we were upset to move. Everybody knew I was upset. My face doesn't hide a lot. Like, has not ever, right? Ever since. So, like, even if I didn't say it, they knew. But I also took my ass down to Monterey and said, okay, here's where I am now. And at that point, my aunt had 3 kids. And so it was, just like, it was hopping into another situation of just like babysitting and caretaking and life. And so I went to school and then I think rebelled in some way where maybe if I had stayed here, I had like plans to apply to schools and go to different places. And when I was there, I was just like, I don't care. I'm going to go to community college because you made me, because I'm staying here. And so if I just wanted to work, I was like, I'm just going to work and make money and do whatever I want. I don't care. And they were like, no, my uncle loves like potential. He's like, you're wasting your potential. You're so smart. You need to do things. And I was like, sure, whatever. I'll go to this silly school. I went to the community college down there. I worked like 3 or 4 jobs. Like, I worked at a restaurant on the wharf. I worked for a youth center. At one point I had like a job at the youth center, at a car rental place, at the tiny airport, at a hotel, and for like a babysitting service at the same time. Like, I was just busy all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cause you just were like, I just want to work.
I just want to work. I just like want money. And what else am I doing? Work. Right. Exactly. And I'm still mad. Right.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Take it out on the work.
Yes, right. This is why I don't want to work anymore. Just in case anyone's like curious.
Anyone, if there's anyone out there who just wants to donate, $500 million. Yeah. Feel free.
We're taking it. Yes.
Write the check.
We'll
right now. Then
we'll send you our Venmo.
Right.
Yeah.
Apple Pay. That's fine.
Exactly.
I was gonna ask you about the respect thing too, because that's a big part. It sounds like it's a big part of your dynamic in your family. Yes. Right. Like there's some really positive things that come with, like, we take care of each other, we're all together. We're, someone steps in when we're, there's a respect piece there. And at the same time, there's also this like dynamic of like, well, when am I respected? In my, like, as a child, am I respected as a child of someone? So I wonder if you have thoughts about sort of like that aspect of like growing up.
It's so weird to me, again, like being a parent now, right? Because I think like I unpack this a lot in therapy too, is that my therapist will ask me something about myself and I'm like, what? No, of course not. Like, I would never do that. And then this question is like, well, what about Ari? Well, of course, naturally, yes. Like, I respect Ari. I want him to respect me. I want him to feel empowered to like make decisions and say things and like speak his truth. And then she's like, well, yeah. Like, so what about you? What? What do you mean? Was it me? Who's me?
Me?
It's so hard. And it's like really hard to unlearn, right? Like to sit back and say, I matter. And like, those things were not okay. Or, that was not healthy, or that is traumatic. Now, would I ever have that conversation with my family? Highly unlikely. I will continue giving my therapist money every week and talking about it in therapy. But like, it's such a, like, even when I think about it, right? Like, if I'm supposed to like role play or something and like do this thing where I like say, I'm like, I can feel it in my throat, just like, and the tension and the, like how scared I get to like, to be disrespectful, like to really seem unappreciative or ungrateful for everything that like my family has done for me. And I know my family's crazy, right? Like, I can go back and look at, again, all of these places and times where I'm like, this was unhealthy, this is traumatic, I hadn't talked to my mom in years, right? Like years and years. Intentionally, I made this choice. My dad moved to Germany for work. 3 or 4 years ago. Oh, it was like 4 years ago. It was the like summer that I had Ari. My dad moved to Germany for work. And I remember when my dad told me he was moving, I called Travis and I was like, he's going to call us and be like, I called Suzanne, right? Like I talked to Susie, and both of us were just like waiting, like biding our time, right? Like I know this man's going to call me and tell me he talked to our mom. And it totally happened. And he called me one day, very excited. And he was like, guess who I just talked to? And I was like, who? He's like, your opa, like my mom's dad. And I was like, cool. Like, how was that for you? And he's like, oh, you know, like my German isn't as great and his English isn't good, but he was so happy to hear from me. And he knew who I was. And so you should call him. I was like, that man does not know me from anybody. Like, right. I'm not gonna call him. And then he was like, you need to call Susie. Like you should call Susie. And I called because my dad asked me to, right? Wow. Which is one of these places where I'm just like, my agency is so, like the capacity feels diminished in places where I'm like asked to do things from my family, even though I know I'm going to have feelings about it later. Right. Like, and that's hard. Like I had the conversation with my mom. It was to be expected, like not great. And I remember her being like, you called. And I was like, I called because my dad asked me to call. Like, just to be very clear, like I did not call because I decided after 15 years I wanted to talk to you. I called because my dad asked me to call you so that when he asks me, did you call Susie? I can say, yes.
Casual. Just a casual.
Just a casual conversation. Yes.
How was it? Fine.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's good, Jen. That's good. That's good.
But you would describe your relationship with your dad as good. Like you have a good relationship with your dad.
Yes. I think that it's been built that way over time, right? Like when I graduated from high school, I think we were like in a different place and it was hard. There was a lot happening, right? I've always respected my dad. Obviously, like because my dad's always been there, even though he hasn't been there, right? Like there are not many single dads out there.
Yeah.
There are not many single dads of color. And there are definitely not many single dads of color in the Army. Right. Like,
right.
So the fact that my dad made all of this work with like family and bringing people out or like asking people for help or there was a lot of shit that was fucked up along the way. Right.
Sure.
Like, very much. But I can look at that and say, like, I really respect what you did. And I'm very grateful for like, the fact that he didn't leave us with our mom. He could have. He could have just done that and said, well, this is their mom and this is who, you know, kids should be with their mom. But he didn't do that because he knew it wasn't going to be a good situation for us,
right?
Even with everything else that happened. And I think now, like, my dad is very kind. He's very nice. He is so like not petty. That man has like holds no grudges. It's so weird. Which is why I'm like, why are you talking to Susie? Like you also haven't talked to her for decades. You were married. She was terrible. I don't understand. Your kids don't like her. And he's just like, she's going through a hard time, you know? Like I still like wish her well. And I wish that I had maybe more of that sort of ability to let things go.
The good way.
But I don't. But yeah, I think like he's very supportive. He's been very supportive of us like having Ari and the restaurant. And I think even when things in our relationship have been challenging, my dad has been like, you're very strong. You're very capable. Like I am here for you and whatever you need, just let me know. And he's the same way with the restaurant opening. Like, hey, this is what I can do. If you need more, you just let me know. Paulo was talking to him about like investing money, and my dad, and Paulo called him to say thank you. And he said, thanks for your money. And my dad said, it's our money. And I was just like, oh my God, that's so nice. You should send me more. But
how much more do you have?
How much more casual? Yeah, I think it's good. I think we've learned to be like in a much better place. And I think it's just sort of like respecting boundaries, right? Of like what I know where my dad will go and where he won't go. But I know that he cares and he like supports us and he wants us to be happy and all of these things. but it's not like my relationship with him is different than my relationship with my aunt, even like his sister, because I can talk to her about everything, or she, you know, like she'll gossip with me. She tells me all the family business. My dad won't talk about that. Right.
Like, right.
He won't go there.
There's so many dynamics to that too, right? There's the, like the male dynamic and the, you know, all of those things. And there's like a generational piece. And I imagine that you're not, you know, if your dad is not communicating to you, like, you know, like my parents didn't either. Like, what's going on? They're like, we can't talk to you. That's
why are you in our business? Right.
Don't worry about it. So, you know, it's also hard to know like what the actual situation was, because they're not really talking about it. And then you're just like, okay, this is crazy. I'm glad. I mean, that's like what I know of your relationship with your dad is that it's very like stable.
It's very stable. It's very chill. Like it's not, there's like,
he just wants to play guitar and barbecue. Yes,
and barbecue. It's truly my dad's like, he wants to barbecue. He wants to feed people. He wants to play guitar. And you like can't be mad at that. Right. Like it's soothing and nice. And yeah. And I think I've even noticed like with Ari, like he's so chill. Just like if Ari is having a moment, he just like will sit with him while he's going through it. I can't do that sometimes because I'm too close to the moment. But yeah, it's stable. It's chill. There's like low expectation, which I think is nice. Right. Yeah. Like it's just like come for lunch.
Yep.
That's
casual. It's just an easy.
And I think I would guess it's because there's a dynamic of like my dad understanding that like there was this like codependency, right? For so long of like needing me to do these things that I know wasn't ideal for him, but they needed to happen for all of us. And so now being able to sort of reciprocate by being like helpful and like low barrier and, you know, like, low expectations and just, I think, and also just really, believing that we're like all very capable, which I'm like, that's kind. We're not that capable sometimes, but like really just, you know, like letting us do our own things. This like, if I tell my dad I've changed my job multiple times, which I have, he's just like, congrats, Jen. That's great. I know he understands it 0%. But like the feedback loop with him is, there's no feedback. That's good, Jen. I'm proud of you. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your relationship with your brother is, you're still pretty close, even though you've lived like 3,000, 6,000 miles away from each other.
Totally. Yeah. I think because we were so connected at the, like hip. I mean,
it was
for
just
so
the
long.
Two of you, right?
Right. Yeah. Truly like just the two of us for so long. And I think like, you know, my brother's married now, he has a family of his own. And so our communication style is like very different. And the, you know, like the ways that we get to connect and see each other, but it's also really cool. And my brother's in the Marines and he's been gone from home for a really long time too. And so it's cool to see him. He's also crazy, but like to see him be that person, right? Like to come into his own and to like have his family and, you know, he's getting ready to retire. And like, what does he want to do with the next steps of his life? But
he's
yeah,
gonna retire
still,
from the Marines soon.
He's like, I mean, Travis joined in 2004. So 3 years will be 20 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, so we're really close. And then like, I'm really close with Franco, but in a different kind of way, right? Like Franco lives with us. And I think he's been with me on and off for so long that, you know, the other day he said something like, well, I guess, if you like really think about it, you kind of raised me. And I was like, welcome to that realization. I guess if you do even sort of think about it, yes, that's true. But you know, like I've been in like a caretaking situation with Franco for so long, but he's always been my brother, right? Like my little brother.
Right.
And so I remember like going to the mall with him or something and saying like, offside shit and people giving us side eyes. And I'd be like, he's my brother. I'm not his mom. It's fine. Right. And now, like, sort of feeling really protective of wanting to make sure that, like, he's okay and he's safe and he's happy and whatever. But also, he's 23 and he doesn't want to live with me and my family anymore. And he wants to be out on his own and doing his own stuff.
Yeah.
And that's, it's like hard to like let go of that thing. Like, that's something that's been really hard for Paulo, is that Paulo has no siblings. And so he really doesn't understand that dynamic of like being very angry at your sibling and still being like, well, it's my brother. I don't know what else. That's just it, right? Like, yeah, you can be mad at each other. You can be very upset. You can have very different feelings. But at the end of the day, like, that's your person. That's your oldest friend, you know, like, or your only, like, that's the like person you've been with for forever. So it's like trying to explain that is very difficult. And I wonder about that for Ari, like, as an only child, of like him not having that experience of someone to like tether himself to.
Yeah.
Or it's me because he chose me. But
yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But yeah, it gives me, you know, like, I definitely don't want more kids and he will be an only child, but it makes me wonder. Or I was reading something the other day about someone who said that like his parent died and he was an only child. And he was like, you know, after people sort of do what they're supposed to do of like checking in and doing whatever, he's like, you're really left to like grieve by yourself. And I think about my mortality so much more now that I'm a parent.
Yes,
and I
was like,
oh God, when I die, Ari's going to be alone. Like, no one will be there to like grieve with him. And that gave me anxiety. Not enough to have another child, but something that I hadn't thought about before, right? Like, that's sad.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. Well, hey, I want to get more into Ari and Paulo, because we've been talking about them, but let's take a quick break and we'll talk a little bit about your journey to UW Tacoma. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. And we're still here with Jen, and she is spilling the tea about growing up Jen.
Great.
And so at some point, you moved back to the South Sound here in Washington State.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you decided to go to UW Tacoma.
I did.
In what year was that?
Oh, gosh. Oh, maybe 2007. I'm so bad with like connecting years and times. I feel like some people really have that skill and I don't. I moved home. I finished school at Pierce College, so I got my AA from Pierce, and then I was
you started in Monterey.
Started in Monterey, and then I moved home to help take care of Franco.
Okay.
And so I finished school here, and then I started applying to schools and was like, I want to go somewhere different. I want to live somewhere different. And for some like God awful reason, I decided to move to Eugene, Oregon. So I went to UO for a quarter and I truly hated it. Like, it was an honestly awful experience. I feel like I'm pretty introverted, but I've not in my life other than that time, like, found it like very difficult to connect with anyone. Like, I truly have like, there's not one person that I still know from that school. I didn't make any friends. Like, it was just a very like isolating, weird experience. And my dad was deploying again. And so I told him I wanted to come home and he was like, no, you should stay. It's important. You're in school, do this thing. Like, I'll figure it out. I'll do something else with Franco. And I called my aunt crying hysterically. And I was like, you have to tell my dad I need to move home. Like, I cannot be here. So she called my dad and she said, let Jennifer come home. So I came home and I applied to UWT and UW Seattle. I'm pretty sure. And ended up going to UW Tacoma because it was closer.
Much closer.
Truly, it was much closer. I was taking care of Franco. He was in school. And so the idea of like commuting and being able to like do school pickup and drop off and like you know, the Y closes at six or whatever it was, made that more of a viable option. So I went to UWT and I started working in the career center. And then I got hired full time. Like that was my first sort of professional gig, although I'd been working since I was like 15. And so before, or while I was in school, I worked for the YMCA for a really long time doing like summer camp and winter camp and after school and before school care. And that's what I thought I wanted to do, was sort of get into that like idea of work, like working with kids and sort of some sort of capacity like that. And then was at the Career Center and they were hiring for this like role that I started doing interim, and then I started doing interim, I think. And then I was hired full time. And then I just stayed, and that was that.
And then it got crazy. And then we worked together.
And then it got crazy. Yes.
Yeah.
That like idea of bonding over trauma as well.
It was a very tumultuous time.
It was. Yes. Yeah, I think back on that sometimes and I'm like, that was not healthy either. Like, what were we doing?
I don't know. We didn't know what we were doing.
None of us.
We were told that we didn't know what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point in this landscape, you saw or you were approached by, at least from what Paulo shared in his podcast. Listen to Paulo's podcast if you want to hear this other perspective.
A retelling of sorts.
So how did you and Paulo connect? Like, how did you?
So Paulo was a student and we... his office was across the hall from like the office that I worked in. And he was around quite a bit, like all the time, as most like students were in that sort of area. But at some point, for some very terrible reason, we all, like many folks in the division, decided to do like this no carb diet. And we were two of the people that were participating. And so I found myself having meals with folks a lot to like commiserate, essentially. And so that's how we started hanging out. And then we just sort of like kept hanging out. I think for a while it was like, I was actually seeing someone that I had like gone to high school with and was trying to like decide whether that was a like good option in my life. Like, very nice guy, and he had moved home and we were in like similar life situations that he was like helping to caretake for his dad, who was you know, like sick, and I was taking care of Franco. And so I had been sort of like casually seeing this guy and then sort of like hanging out with Paulo more and more. And I remember my cousin Ray was like, what are you doing with this other guy? Like, Paulo's awesome. And I was like, Paulo is awesome. Like, that's true. Like, he's very nice. Right. And like, he's like very easygoing, very mellow. And so we started dating and it was very like, I remember I talked to HR because I was like, is this fine? Like, what's happening here? Am I going to get in trouble? And our HR team was like, which also still like gives me pause now, said that like faculty had been very adamant about retaining the right to date students. And so like, if faculty could do it, staff could do it. And I wonder now if like, and I think I wondered then too, but I was like, great, I'm not going to get in trouble. This sounds good.
Right.
And so, yeah, so that's sort of like how we met and where we met, and we continued dating like through him being in school, and then ended up, and then Paulo went through this like journey of sort of trying to figure out what he wanted to do, like be a dentist, or he was trying to start a video company for a little while, I think, and then a fashion line.
Yep.
And then sort of came full circle and was like, I used to want to go to culinary school. I think I want to do that again. And so that's how we ended up moving to Seattle so that he could go to Seattle Central for culinary school.
Yeah. And yeah, that was a journey. I remember all of those steps as someone who worked there and knew him and worked with him too.
Right. That
it was something about his creativity and his like need to like
do something,
do something and like do something that meant something.
Yes.
I think that was where I think the dentistry thing was sort of like the plug in his ear to say, oh, you should do this. And he's like, okay, that sounds fine. Which a lot of our students come to college with, but I think for him, it was like this bubbling sort of like need to be creative and also to like, cause he has this sort of community mindedness too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just like, I want to, you know,
it's like,
now he's now he sort of like wants to make money and like, you know, have this giant franchise.
Me too.
but he always is like, you know, now they're always like, well, how are we serving the community? How are we connected to the community?
How do we
give back? Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it, you know, I think that's a really important trait in someone that is not always there. So.
Yeah. It was a really, it was like very, I remember feeling like very, like inspired, I think a little bit when Ray was like, what are you doing? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, Paulo's younger than me. He's a student. Like, there's so much more like stuff there, right? Where this guy that I'm talking to from high school, same age as me. And he's in like a very similar life situation. And all, and he was like, this is like, you're being dumb. I was like, cool. Yeah. No, cool. Thanks
for the directness.
Right. Yeah. But I think you're right. Like there is the same kind of idea of sort of like respect and expectation and whatever of like, you should be a dentist. And so like, I'm going to be a dentist when like, clearly you should not be a dentist, which I think was like clear to
bio.
Everyone, right. Except
or chemistry,
Paulo Campbell of those. And like his family until, you know, it was the right choice. And so, he went to culinary school and we moved to Seattle and, I think for a while we're like, oh, should we move? Should we, you know, do something different or go somewhere different? And then, you know, have just sort of like found our place here, in the last few years where I feel like it really would feel jarring to like move and really start over.
Yeah. Well, and like you mentioned too, like Paulo comes from like such a different background, like growing up,
100%.
Like he was also moving around a lot because in the military, but you know, he was an only child
in a nuclear family.
Nuclear family, very easygoing, like just go with the flow sort of attitude about everything.
And he had so much more like access to exploring, right? Like Paulo was in band. He was, you know, like he could play sports. He did cheerleading. He did all of these things. And I think like there, it is a very different, and I think it's, you know, difficult for him sometimes to understand like my family dynamics because they're dynamic. But it was really, really different. It's still very different. Like even, you know, like communicating with our families now is very different. Like communicating with my family feels easygoing and communicating with Paulo's family doesn't always feel that way for me.
Then you had this beautiful, memorable wedding in Hawaii. It was like, I told Paulo this too, but it was really like one of the best like wedding experiences ever. One, because it's obviously in Hawaii.
It's Hawaii.
And it's like, this is a
great chance.
Like, oh, please twist my arm to go to Hawaii to go to this wedding. But I remembered it being like, I remember you invited me to come to like the dress fitting and I was like, are we like in like this? And you're like, yeah, come. Like,
yes.
You were so easygoing about it. But there was like a flow to the whole thing, I think, for
Was very deep. So like my oldest friend who was in the wedding too, my friend Deanne, who I've known since middle school, was like, I'm very surprised at like the bride that you were, in that it was just like not stressful, right? Like none of it was stressful.
You were not stressed at all.
No. And I think it was really leaning into that idea of like, how can you be mad or sad or stressed? Like, you're in Hawaii. Like it just is, it's magical. Like it's beautiful. And we had a wedding planner for the day of to like help us with stuff. And I remember she was like so anxious about everything. Right. And I think was just like waiting for a bridezilla moment of some sort. And it rained, which ended up being beautiful. But we had tables outside. And I remember she was like, it's going to rain. And I was like, okay. And she's like, who's going to move the table? Like, we don't have anybody to move the tables. Who's going to move the tables? And I was like, the people sitting at the tables will move the tables. And she's like, you mean your guests? And I was like, do you know how much money I paid for all these people to be here today? Like, and by me, I mean my dad, but like, yes, they will move the tables. And they did. And she was like, I've never seen this happen at a wedding before. And I was like, you've never done very many brown weddings, I think. Like,
you live in Hawaii.
Right. Like, these are our people, like our true people. This is our family. Like, they're going to do whatever, you know. Like, my aunts were making lays that day in the morning, like with flowers on the property.
So beautiful.
My dad offered a barbecue that morning because he was worried we wouldn't have enough food.
Of course.
On brand.
Played like songs. He sang a song at your wedding.
Like in the middle, which was a surprise. Like they all practiced together. And,
like, and you're just like,
bawling. I just started sobbing. Yeah.
So sweet.
It was a lot of stuff that like, I thought my aunt was going to do like an opening prayer and she got nervous. So my uncle did it. I love my uncle, but he's like long winded. And my aunt and uncle are very,
I remember you saying that.
Yeah. And they're very like Bible-based Christian. And I was like, oh my gosh, like he's going to say something. I like, hope it's not offensive. I remember he said edify. And I was like, remind me to look that up later. Like, I don't know what he's talking about. But everybody was just really respectful of like the day we wanted and the day we had and how, you know, like how we were feeling. And, it's truly like I operate at a high stress level regularly and I have a lot of anxiety, and that's one of the only times in my life that I can really remember just like not being stressed, like letting it all go in regards to like planning and, you know, big events and things like that.
Yeah, it really was just such a beautiful, I think also because you weren't stressed, like we're all like, you know, we've learned to be like, we can follow your lead. Like if this is not going well, you also would have had like a whole swarm of bees, like to make people be like, this is happening right
now. But I just wanted everybody to have fun and feel like loved and like important. And like, I just wanted everyone to have fun. I was like, there's truly no reason for any of us here to be stressed out. Like we ran out of water and I had to have my brother go get water and he came back with beer, just like rolled the huge pickup truck up with just huge. Like cans of beer. And I was like, sir, we have children here who need water. Like someone needs to go get water. We're on the North Shore. Like there's not a store close. So like somebody else had to go, but I feel like that could have been a moment for me. And I was just like, fuck it. We got a lot of beer, I guess.
You had a lot of everything, if I remember correctly, a lot of food, a lot of everything.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I think, you know, you all were married and you're living in Seattle, and then your family journey started, which was also quite the journey, like to have your own family, right? To be this person who is in your family, who takes care of people, to then want your own family to take care of.
Yeah.
And then it was a journey. Then it was up and down and left and right.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I've been like reflecting a lot more because Ari turns 4 next week, of just like what that journey was like and what it felt like, and thinking like the same thing, like, God, so much of that is still like very like deeply etched in my brain of like how it felt and what it was like. And so we had a roommate for a long time when we were in Seattle. So we were living with our friend Tommy. And when we decided to like move out and we were going to find our own place and, you know, like, work was going well for both of us. And sort of like deciding, I guess, like, yeah, now would be like a good time to like have a baby. I think, right? Like,
sure.
Right. And I, you know, like come from a very big family. And I think like Paulo and I at that point had been together for a really long time. Like we were together for 5 years before we got married. And I think my family was like, a wedding, that's really cool. Yeah, great. Like, when are you having babies? So I think like people had been like waiting, you know, a really long time and were like curious. And so we were like, yeah, this you know, like, this feels like a good time. Like, let's see what happens. And I think I tried to go into it with like an open mind of thinking like, this might not be as easy as they sort of tell you it's going to be when you're, you know, in high school.
Yeah.
But really had no idea like how difficult and like stressful it could be to like not understand your body. So we got pregnant. I was working in a job that sort of ended up being toxic, also very on brand for me. And it was like really early on, but I remember like starting to miscarry and just feeling like, oh, this is, something's wrong. Like, I know something's not right here. And it's like things that you just like, don't know, but like, it's not quick, or at least it wasn't for me. Right. It's like days of your body sort of like processing, like expelling, you know, a pregnancy. Wow. Like Valentine's Day weekend, or like Valentine's Day 2016, probably. Yeah. 2016. We didn't tell anybody we were pregnant. It was like very much, you know, like wait 12 weeks and, you know, like anything could happen. And I think when you say that, it feels like the right thing to say then, like, of course, yeah, sure, anything could happen. And then when you miscarry, it's like
awful.
Yeah. And like, oh, you mean like the baby you were planning for dies, like, or doesn't make it to term, right? Like it's not just like anything could happen. And so the miscarriage was really hard for me. And I remember just like feeling really alone and tired and exhausted and confused and being like, I didn't even talk to anybody about it because nobody knew that we were pregnant. Right. So it's like, you go through all of these emotions by yourself and you're like, and everybody's like, it's normal. There's nothing wrong with you. And you're like, that's fine. Like, sure, that's true. But also like, what's going on? Like then why isn't it working? Right. And I think also feeling like, I think I told Ryan this like a long time ago, but I was like, that's probably one of the only times where I've like truly said stuff to Paulo that I was like, oh, that was like not nice, or, you know, like not, just like, I couldn't understand the way he was grieving was not the same way I was grieving. And I couldn't like reconcile why. Right. And I think like, you know, I've read a lot since then of like, when you're like the partner, you know, you're trying to like support your partner, and also like, it's not your body. Right. And so like, you're not experiencing everything that's happening. And like, and then you also want to be like, it's okay. Or like, you know, and then people say terrible stuff like, well, you can just try again, or at least, you know, you can get pregnant. And so, you know, there's so much stuff. And so we got pregnant, I had a miscarriage. I got pregnant again, I had a miscarriage. And I remember being like, if we get pregnant, like, oh, if we don't get pregnant this year, like, I'm out, like, I'm done. Right. Yeah. Like, I just don't think that I could do this again. And I didn't know if it was like now or forever or whatever, but I just knew like I needed a break. I couldn't keep like trying, and the like anticipation, and everyone has
so painful
feedback and thoughts, and like, you should do this, or you should do that, or, you know, you're getting older, so like, you're getting close to a geriatric pregnancy, and also, by the way, like, you're getting kind of obese, so you should lose weight. It's just like
so great to women in our country.
Yeah, it's very casual, right? Like, okay, this is this is fine. Awful. I feel great about myself and my body and what I'm capable of, and, you know, whatever.
And going through like grief and loss, right? Like,
and like a
trying to understand
cycle of it that makes you, yeah. And then, you know, like the like anticipation and the buildup of like, oh, okay, like this is what this is going to be like, or this is what we're going to do. And then like, it just like burns, like it goes away. Like, it was like literally like you flush it down the toilet and you're like, okay, this is not happening this time. So I was like,
so devastating.
It was really hard. And truly made me like think more about, you know, like, I know so many people who have had miscarriages that like just either don't talk about it, or just like, we just don't talk about it, like as a culture, as a society, you know, like everything, or just the journey to parenthood. Like, is not easy.
Right.
Or for some folks it is, but not for everyone. Right. And so, yeah, I was like, if we don't get pregnant this year, like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to. And then we got pregnant, right before Thanksgiving that year. And so I was like, we need to tell people, like, we need to tell people before 12 weeks, because that's a shit rule, because then something does happen and you grieve on your own. And that's stupid. Right.
Like, and you've done it twice by that.
Right. Point. And like, we need people. I need people. Like, I can't do that again. Yeah. And so we told people, smart, like, having folks over for Thanksgiving, and it just felt better that time. Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, feeling like we had more people on our side and more people who cared and were there. And then I had a terrible pregnancy and it was very hard. And like, Paulo's a chef and all I ate was like Easy Mac and orange, like Gatorade. And he had a lot of feelings about that.
The best irony, right?
Huge. I was so swollen. Like, like Ari was on brand for Ari since he was in the womb, right? Like, it was a time. And we were open, like, Paulo was opening the restaurant with Mark. And so,
right.
So Paulo was opening a restaurant, like, our friend Mark had, they had been working together and he was leaving to open his own spot. And Paulo was like, when you go, I'm coming, like, no matter what, just let me know, I'm there. And then, restaurants are like not notoriously on time. And so they were supposed to open in like February and then they didn't. So it kind of got pushed back. And then it was like April and then May. And then like, I'm just like more and more pregnant. And so the restaurant opened on July 26th of 2017 and Paula went to work. And thankfully my aunt had come a few days beforehand, which is that like goes back to that caregiving thing of, my dad was like, Jen will be fine. She's been around a lot of babies. And my aunt was like, Jen needs someone there. Like, I have to be there. Like, you're in Germany already. Someone needs to be there for her. And he was like, okay, cool. Like, can you and Nate come? So my aunt had come like 2 days before. So Paulo did the first service of Opus. Like, they opened the restaurant. It was amazing. It was great. And I think at like 11:30 or 12, I called and I was like, hey, I think we need to go to the hospital. And very much like a movie, like you have no idea what's happening with your body. And I was like, I think my water broke because like, usually I know how to hold my pee and that didn't feel like pee, but I don't really know. So we should go to the hospital. So Paulo came home just sort of like frantic and like in a, like so like amped, right? Like turnt. And I was very serene and like, we should just go, we don't know, like they'll probably send us home, you know, let's see what happens. I don't even know if my water actually broke. And then hospitals are really slow and take forever. And so we waited for a while and we were sort of in intake. And they were like, you know, we're going to have somebody come and check to like, make sure that you're actually in labor, you know, whatever. So we were just waiting. And then Ari's heart rate dropped like really quickly. And so the like room activated very quickly and they were going to check to see if like how far dilated I was. And the nurse went to check and my water broke like all over. And it was so bad. It was literally like a movie, like water just squirted everywhere. And they were like, oh my God. And I was literally on like my hands and knees on a hospital bed that they like wheeled into delivery. And they were like, prep a room, like whatever, like,
oh, you know, my
see what God happens. And then Ari's heart rate chilled. And they were like, okay, let's wait and see. And so we waited like a few more hours, and was just sort of like going through like contractions and stuff like that. And our doctor came in and she was like, you know, we're going to see how things go. How are you feeling? Whatever. And I think because of my miscarriages and my stress and like my anxiety, all like, my whole pregnancy, you know, they ask you like, what are your goals? Like, what do you want? And I was like, I want to be alive and I want the baby to be alive. Like, these are my goals.
Yeah.
I don't care how we get there. Like, I think I want meds. I'm not too sure. I'll decide, like, whatever makes the most sense, like whatever is best for the baby. And so our doctor was getting ready to leave. She was like going off for the day. And again, Ari's heart rate like dropped like crazy. And she pushed a button and she was like, "We're going to have your baby now." And I was like, "Okay." And then literally 5 minutes later, they pulled Ari out.
Like C-section
of my body. C-section. Yeah. Like they rushed us into the OR. And they like prepped the table and did the things, and then they pulled him out of my body. It was wild. I think like Paula didn't bring his phone because it was so fast. It was just like, they were like, they pushed the button, 20 people ran in. They were like, give him scrubs, like prep him for the OR, get her ready, let's go. And I remember later being like, I was like so cold. I'm like, my teeth were chattering the whole time and I had like thrown up. And I remember when they like even put Ari next to my cheek, I was just like, what's happening here? Like, I couldn't, like, it went so fast. Right. I was like, what's going on? And then when they were wheeling us out of the OR, like I threw up. Like they were just like, Ari was like on the bed with me and I threw up. And I remember the nurse held him and it was just like, it was so quick and so wild. And yeah. it was such an up and then a down and then an up and then a down. And by that point it was like, I think Ari was born like right before 8 a.m. And so my aunt had called to say like, "Hey, how are you guys doing?" And Paula was like, "We're fine. Like they said, it'll probably be a few hours, like take your time. Don't worry about it." And she was like, "Okay, great. Like when Nay and Franco wake up, we'll come." And so she called at like, 6:30 or something. It was like, "We're on our way." And Paula was like, "Sounds good." And then Paula called at, 8:02 and was like, "So we have a baby." And she's like, "What just happened?" He's like, "Honestly, it was a lot." Like,
so wild.
And so then, yeah, like nobody even knew we were in the hospital, right? Like, because we left and thought like, we'll just text everyone in the morning. Because there's no reason to like wake everyone up in the middle of the night. If we're going to go home, it'll probably be hours, like whatever.
So unassuming. And then, yeah.
Right. And then we text people in the morning. We're like, "We had a baby." My brother was like, "Why the fuck didn't you call me?" And I was like, "Listen, it went really quickly.
Didn't call anybody.
Right. It got weird really quickly. Like it went really quickly."
I think it's interesting too, like, that you were like taking care of other people as you were having a baby. You're like, let's just not bother people with what's going on. I'm just going to the hospital. I think I might be having a baby, but we'll it's fine.
Yeah, we'll just see.
They'll just figure it out.
And people were like, "What's wrong with you? Like, you could have called, or you should have called." And I was like, I don't know. Like, I wasn't in the right frame of mind, obviously.
Right. And neither of you really knew what was going on. So
truly had no idea.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's worth saying too that you also had a really difficult post baby experience. Like I don't think folks are also really talking about that either. Like
right.
Like, it was really hard for you to heal, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like you have a baby, so everything's wonderful. You're like sleeping all the time and everything's wonderful.
No,
right? So like your body is ravaged and it was pulled out of you. And
yeah,
I remember you had a lot of healing to do.
Yeah. My aunt had C-sections and I remember being like, my scar is still like, it still like tingles. And my aunt was like, "Oh, that still happens to me now." And I was like, "What do you mean it happens to you now? Like your children are very grown." She's like, "Yeah, it's just like, the like things coming back together." And like some people have C-sections and they're great and they're fine, right? Like I see photos of women who look mad put together after they had a baby in a C-section. That was not my experience. I looked a hot ass mess. Like I could not walk. I was super swollen. Yeah. Like, and then just like coming home and like Ari couldn't latch and he didn't gain enough weight right away and his tongue had to be clipped and like,
oh my God, right.
It was a lot, right? Like it was, and Ari does not like sleep and has not liked sleep ever. And I just feel like everybody's like, "Oh, like, my child was like a child, like they were a person like when they were born." And I'm like, Ari was truly like a fully formed person when he was born. Like, he came out with like conviction and like feelings and thoughts, and like still has
opinions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, didn't talk until he was like almost three, and yet said a lot up until that point.
Yep. It was the eyes.
It was.
It's the always eyebrows. Been the eyes. Yeah. The eyes and the eyebrows. Like, I don't believe that you know what you're
truly
talking about.
Truly, you're all incompetent.
You're like, you're 6 months old.
Like, why are you looking at me with that face? Like, you're truly eating from my body. Like, can you not look at me like I'm stupid?
Yes. Yeah. Anyone who has seen pictures of Ari has seen the face.
Yes.
It's very, I mean, yeah. You should brand the face, because that's, or meme the face, and it's maybe he'll be like a meme.
It's very memeable. But I think, like, it's so cliche, right? But after having a baby, like, you truly find out like who your people are, right? And I think, like, not just like who your friends are, but for us, like, we didn't have family in the area. And so it was like truly like finding family too. And I think that's where, like, so grateful for you and Ryan and Mark and, you know, Cecily and like all of these people who like activated to like become, you know, like our family here. And I remember my dad was like very upset that some of like my family didn't come to visit, which is not necessarily because my dad wanted people to visit me, but like out of respect for him, they should have come to see me, which I'm like, that's hilarious. But I was just like, I just don't need that stress, right? Like, I don't need that stress. And my aunt was like, they're good. She was like, I told your dad, like, they're fine. Like, they don't need to come. Like, they have these people, like Bernie and Ryan are there. Like, Ryan came to the hospital, like Omar took me home. Like, they're good. Right. Which I think like made me feel really proud of the fact that like, we've created community like in this place where I was like, which is why I'm like, we can't move ever. Like, how would we start over? We're all moving to Covington.
Yeah, we're moving to Eugene, where you had such a great experience
together,
or Monterey.
Right.
If we move, everyone's moving with us.
If we move, everybody's coming too. Because, like, you can't have children on your own. Like, it's no. If you guys moved, I would be like, we gotta go. Right. Where are they going? We're going too. It's
well, it's, you know, a lot. To your point. I feel like, even though, you know, Ari doesn't have a sibling and our kid is not, at least the plan is not for us to have a sibling.
Yes.
We've learned in this world, you never really know what's going to happen. Like, some kid could just literally walk in your door and you're like, I guess you live here now.
You live here now. Yeah.
But I have been really happy that we have kids. They're not the same age, but they're close enough.
Yeah.
And Ari's always been so obsessed with Eli.
Which is Eli
now the opposite way too. Right? Like, so I feel like they have like access to another sibling-esque person. Cousin is what
they
we
know.
Call
them. They know that like who their people are, which I love. And that makes me, but yeah, I think that's, I was looking at their pictures because like Ari and Eli have a shared photo album. And like from the very, very beginning, like Ari has just been like so enamored and like in love with Eli. And it's weird because he does not share that same affection with others, some of us. It is like
he doesn't ever get like as annoyed with Eli as he does, like, let's say me. Or Uncle Ryan, or
or even when he's frustrated, Paulo. Like, yeah, I'm like so intrigued about like that bond and that relationship. Yeah. But I am Eli very has glad a pass. That obviously
Eli
yeah.
always has a pass. He's like, well, Eli, like even he's just like, Eli, stop it.
I'm yeah,
like, how come he doesn't get the stop?
I know, right? It's so he doesn't fascinating. Get the full
force, like he really doesn't. He has a little bit of a caretakerness, maybe.
Yeah.
And for Eli. Yeah. And Eli, you know, he can be a handful, but
he's turnt too.
He can get, I mean, he was turnt tonight. That's why I was late. I was late. Well, hey, we have done, as we close out, we have done the listeners a disservice by not saying Beyonce, Beyonce, Beyonce.
Oh my gosh, so I know. That's
right. We have not talked enough about that. So why don't we end by you just talking about how much you love Beyonce. Why don't we
One of my favorite memories of us is us going to Beyonce on my birthday. But before that, we went to go get pho and Ari was a mess at the restaurant.
One of the best memories ever. Like Ari was literally like swinging noodles around. And it was, I think it was one of the, I find kids like so funny. Like I was just telling Jen tonight, like Eli was just turned before bed and he was like sticking up his leg. And most parents are like, this is so frustrating. Just like go the F to sleep. And I was trying to hold back my laughter because it's so funny to me. Like, I don't know when that comes out, but they're just so.
Yeah.
But when Ari was spinning that noodle, those noodles everywhere and people, they were going literally everywhere in this restaurant. Shout out to Pho Back. Soup Shop. Yes. Yeah, Pho Back Soup Shop. Yeah. Shout out to them because they were all about it too.
Like, this is hilarious. I love it. They're like, this is the best. Yes.
Yeah.
But that is one of my favorite memories of our friendship is going to Beyonce together and experiencing that moment. In time. And I wore my Brown Skin Girl shirt today, which you also gave me for Christmas.
Very easy to buy you Christmas presents. It's just like, Beyonce.com. That's it. That's all it takes.
It's a crew neck and it says Beyonce and it will fit my body. It's going great.
Yeah. Truly. Anywhere from Destiny's Child to.
The range.
Literally not.
It's fine. Star Search to now.
I was thinking too, like Beyonce hasn't done anything, but I was like, no, that's not true. She just won a Grammy for her last album, which came out last year.
Right. Also, I just rewatched Homecoming. So I'm like, she's done a lot. That's the most relatable Beyonce and I have ever been to one another is when she started talking about her pregnancy and her delivery and how much she was and how difficult it was. And I was like, oh, we're the same. And then she started talking about her work ethic and becoming vegan and cutting up all these things to dance again. And I was like,
she had twins and then did Homecoming.
And then did Homecoming.
6 months later.
Yeah. So we're not the same.
Same.
But for a very small moment, we had some kinship going on.
Yes. I think it's fair to say that Beyonce is like part of your like, maybe like your family in your mind.
Yeah, totally. True.
You're Beyonce and I are friends.
Miss Tina is probably more of my family in my mind than Beyonce.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm waiting for Eli and Ari to become famous so that they can make me Miss Tina.
Oh, right. Well, we need a couple more kids to be.
That's my real goal.
Destiny's Child 2.
Right.
The male version.
Anyone listening has a brown child. They'd like to contribute to our children's band because we're not having more kids.
Oh my gosh.
You let us know.
Well, yes.
Or if you want to Venmo us our $5 million. $500 million.
If you just want to cut to the chase and say like you're millionaires. Go make a video in the Louvre with these
kids.
We're
rich. We're here for you.
We'll make a scene in an elevator and, you know, make millions off of that.
Exactly. No yes.
Well, you know, well, thanks for this time as always. And thank you for being so open. I think you've always, you know, I know you as like this really just very open and honest person about all of your journeys that you've had with pregnancy, with mental health, with all of that stuff. And so I think, you know, I think it'll be really helpful for listeners to know that, but also to not have people not feel alone. Like that's so anti-family, right? Is to be like, totally. Well, I'm alone. I'm the only one who's felt this way. I'm the only one who's, you know, taken responsibility this way. So part of what I'm hoping to do in this podcast is try to say like, no, we are actually a bigger family than we think we are, especially after this pandemic hopefully ends sometime soon.
One day
we'll all be together. Will work out okay. Right.
Thank you. This was awesome. I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. So there it is, Jen's addition to the podcast lineup this season. What did you think? What resonated with you? What was surprising to you? Feel free to share your thoughts on our Finding Family Podcast Instagram page, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss our next episode. See you next time.